I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome back to the Lantern Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Zwift for the World Championships Men's Road Race from Helensburgh to Wollongong, 267 kilometres. I'm struggling to pronounce even Australian place names now. What does that say about me? And we have one longer climb on the parcours, Mount Kira, 7.5k, 6%, but that's 220k from the finish. Maybe could have been some more of them. And then 12 repetitions of Mount Pleasant, which isn't nominative determinism. It is quite steep, actually. 1K, 9%. And the last climb crest about 9 kilometers from the finish. So a circuit around Wollongong, sunny conditions, very, very different weather, actually, to the women's race yesterday, which was cool and rainy. Not cold, but cool. Today was very sunny. And warm, actually. I was up here in Sydney. It's very, very different. So that decreased, in my view, Pogačar's chances, increased Alaphilippe's chances. But before we get into the news of the day, mention more on our show partner, Zwift. In case you haven't seen, Zwift are trying to change, or will change, the trainer market. They're bringing out the Zwift Hub, which is the most affordably priced trainer of its quality, I believe, hitting the market on sale from the 3rd of October, making indoor training cheaper and easier to set up than any other trainer on the market. It comes with a cassette of your choice, 8 to 12 speeds, Shimano, SRAM, or Campaq. There's videos on how to set it up on Zwift's YouTube channel, and even helpful stickers on the trainer to set it up with your bike. So if you want to find more about Zwift, head to Zwift.com and check out the new trainer, or sign up for a free 7-day trial if you already have one. But the big news of the day, in fact, was before the race even started, or Europeans woke up to the news, which was that Mathieu van der Poel had been arrested. So maybe, Benji, could you run us through the timeline and chronology of what happened in this, frankly, bizarre story?
In the order that I found it, sports are reported that a 27-year-old, likely Van der Poel, was taken into police custody overnight. This means in Australian night, so significantly before the European night. Then reports by Saivo Shi of VeloNews confirmed that Mathieu van der Poel was indeed the person involved, and that it was... that he was involved in an altercation with two teenagers who had been knocking on his hotel room on Saturday evening, the night into Sunday, the day of the World Championships. So basically, that's what we know at that point. Apparently, he was actually, according to Rothoft, taken to the police station at midnight and was only back at 4 a.m. So his night before the World Championships completely ruined. So he was basically taken into custody, arrested, and reportedly charged with two counts of common assault. I don't know what that means. Perhaps you might know that. And I also read that his passport is confiscated and he needs to appear in court in 2 days in Australia. So that's not ideal. And it had a consequence on the race, of course, because 30 kilometers into the race, he abandoned. And let's be honest about it, it's very likely as a consequence of what happened overnight. What's your take on all of this?
Yeah, and like, it's not just the sleep aspect of it. Like, of course, even without sleep, MVDP can make it further than 25Ks into this race. But imagine the stress and what's going on. First, the actual event, and then getting arrested out of nowhere, probably from his perspective. So we don't know what's happened exactly. It's still like, there's no video of it, at least not that has seen public eye. It's a he said she said. Van der Poel says he didn't, I believe he said he didn't touch them and push them, and they said he did. He just said he asked them not so nicely to stop knocking on his door. And what's bizarre about this is, like, In case you don't know, the Worlds are in Wollongong, which is a separate place to Sydney. His hotel is next to the airport in Sydney, in Brighton-le-Sands, which is not even in the Shire, Sutherland Shire, which is like the deep south of Sydney. It's in Brighton-le-Sands, like an hour from Wollongong. So also, as a, you know, the majority of our listeners are not Australian, so to explain to you, like, cyclists are not probably not treated the same way as maybe MVDP would be treated in the Netherlands. Like, you may be a top tier athlete there, but in Australia, you know, you're just another cyclist on the road. I think Wout and Sturven have said something similar about their experience on the road here in Australia, which is unfortunate. But yeah, that's bizarre. The first thing, they're in a random hotel in Brighton-le-Sands, like not even near Wollongong. And yeah, just the fact that MVDP is going to be in the Sutherland Shire, in the Shire court, like anyone else on a Saturday night sort of getting called up for assault on Tuesday, he's going to be in the court, which is bizarre. My wife grew up in the Shire in early years. So yeah, just so bizarre. Again, we don't know exactly what happened. I would say, like, yeah, I can understand from his perspective, it's like facing the biggest, you know, biggest event of your life tomorrow and you're getting woken up. And it just seems like a lot of people have handled it the wrong way. He has people knocking on his door, shouldn't be doing that. The hotel, maybe the police, just not a great situation that seems to have escalated out of nothing.
In general, every single time you mention the Shire, I'm thinking about hobbits in The Lord of the Rings, but I'll take it as a Belgian here as well. Nonetheless, when it comes to Vanderpool, it's definitely not an ideal situation going into the race, and it showed off during the race, and obviously it has its effects as well, you know. First of all, when it comes to like hotel management and so forth, I think that's done by the Dutch Federation, so perhaps bad management could have been the reason that he ended up in a hotel like that. I don't know that. We don't know the specific reasons behind the scenes, but I think it's been mentioned a few times across Dutch media that that is a potential reason that he was in a corridor with other people that were having lots of noise and so forth and being annoying and so forth. But next to that, there's also, I think he spent like, was it 20K or something on his plane towards Australia, and to then end up in a hotel that is very meh from what I can hear. It's like so counterproductive for your riders as well. And I don't know, would it have been better if he flew economy and then had a better hotel instead?
I wouldn't recommend the economy flight, having just done it. Especially if you need to use your legs afterwards. I don't really need to use mine too much. I just use my mouth. I don't know. It's bizarre. Like, when I heard the hotel was in Brighton-le-Sands, not like, I'm not saying necessarily like it's a terrible hotel. I mean, it's just not in Wollongong. Like, at least a hotel in Wollongong would be aware, okay, these athletes should be on a certain floor or whatever, or be aware at least that you got a top favorite for the World Championships. Ultimately, it's a bit embarrassing, I would say, for Australia and Wollongong, having a top favorite essentially harassed and then arrested. Now, of course, it sounds like he's overreacted, and you know, maybe he will get found guilty as well. So he's obviously, again, on the other side, like, we joke about Brandon Rivera, about Yuri Sagan, but like, roommates like that, actually, they make a difference to the top stars' lives and can help avoid these situations as well. So big shame for the race. How it changed the race, I think Netherlands basically had a free roll with no top leader. They had no one really to ride for. Enkhorn got some freedom, and it meant there was just one less team willing, I think, to chase Belgium's moves or France moves. They were just getting in them.
Yeah, and I think that it also just basically makes it that they want to go earlier in the race. Like you mentioned, there's more free rolls. Like an Enkhorn can have a free roll. Van Baal is probably having the same. A Wout Poels, a Mollema, trying to go for their own chances, trying to get into moves quite a bit. And we saw that in this race as well, basically, as the Dutch team was doing exactly that in today's race. So Van der Poel's leaving of the race certainly had his effect on this race when it comes to the tactics of the Dutch team, and as a consequence also on whatever other tactics worked in this race. But I'm guessing that brings us to the start of the actual race. Unfortunately, indeed, Van der Poel is out. but plenty of action at the start regardless. We went to Mount Kira, and that's the place where, let's be honest about it, I was not expecting much on Mount Kira because I thought this is very early on in the race, but Franz decided, nah, let's make this fun. Franz decided to go on Mount Kira after a break initially already formed at the front of the race with like low-key riders like Jaka Primozic, that BTEC Primoz we spoke about in the preview for Slovenia. And then we also have Juraj Sagan, just like in the the Olympic road race, I think he was also in the breakaway, just like 11 riders like that in the breakaway initially. But on Mount Kira, Franz turns on the oven and creates a massive second group. They started pacing at the front of the peloton, and I think it was Maduas or Armiraj or Pacher pacing, one of the three, I'm not certain. And a group starts forming, which is gigantic, like literally gigantic. 30 riders roughly, five of which are French. Bardet, Sivakov, Pacher, Armiraj, Maduas. Two from Belgium, Van Aert and Seri, which is odd because you'd expect an Evenepoel to be the one going into these earlier moves like he did last year at 200k to go, for example. But today he was not there with 200k to go. It was Van Aert and Seri being in that group. O'Connor and Platt for Australia. Pogacar in that group already for Slovenia. The lone leader already in the move and actively working with that group. Who missed this group? A Cosnefra, an Alaphilippe, an Evenepoel, a Binyam, a Matthews, and so forth. Now, my question to you is, when you see this group occur, first of all, my question is, what was Franz thinking? And also, is it an overreaction from Van Aert and Pogacar to already go into this move?
I've been thinking of what France's plan was for the entirety of today. I think they were trying to do what they did in Leuven last year, which is make the race overall really hard. And then hope Cosnefra or Alaphilippe would be good. I couldn't really elucidate a plan from them, to be honest, because it was like, yeah, smash, create splits, and then not continue on with it after it had a decent gap, and then no one else was going to continue on with it. I didn't really get it. Again, you don't know the condition of Alaphilippe. Like, I assumed when I saw that, I was like, oh, he must be in good shape. Maybe they're trying to bait Evenepoel into attacking with 200Ks to go, like he attacked last year and made a similar mistake. I don't know. Slovenia, yeah, Pog, like he has Tratnik pretty much. So I think he needed to be a little more conservative with his efforts. So I was surprised to see Pogacar so active early, actually.
Yeah, I think so as well. And especially when the group was already looking like it wasn't going to make it that far. To be honest, at a certain point, it looked like it was. The breakaway that I spoke about initially with that Juraj Sagan and Primozic and so forth, those 11 riders were 2 minutes ahead of this group that I just formed with Pogacar, Van Aert, Bardet and so forth. And they had 2 minutes on the peloton at a certain point after Mount Kira, going over to the first Mount Pleasant, for example. So that was a significant gap, but then a vital aspect happens. Cooperation in that G2, in that Pogacar group, kind of stagnates a bit, and we get a small attack off the front with five riders. Sivakov, a Frenchman, Seri, a Belgian, O'Connor and Plapp, the two Australians, and Battistella for Italy. So that's quite a few riders from that group that get ahead, quite a few countries that are not going to pace in the second part of that second group now. The group that is now Pogacar is now behind those five riders who are behind the breakaway. And in all honesty, the cooperation didn't really work out in that Pogacar group anymore. And they started falling further and further towards the peloton who was led by Germany. And Germany's like that one side character in a show that the writers of the show wrote down just to make sure that the plot goes a certain way. Because I swear they have had George Zimmermann, who could like top 15, top 20 this race on his best day. And outside of that, they've got nothing of value here. And they were the most prominent team pacing in the peloton today. Why?
Nicky Hassan, maybe. He's not. Where did he finish? Well, 52nd. I don't know. I don't really know. They took it upon themselves. I mean, good on them. I thought it was going to be other teams earlier, but so many of them were represented ahead. Yeah. I mean, good on Germany. Zimmermann crashed, I think, later. And Spain were pretty active too. They were going for Garcia Cortina, top 10. for UCI points, probably unlikely to win. But we can kind of shoot forward. When that Pogacar removal comes back, then there's the group ahead. It really, nothing happens. Dens tries to go with, I think, Leknesund, my dark horse, and he doesn't make it. Sad times for me. He comes back, and we go to like the fifth last Mount Pleasant. 60Ks, 65Ks to go. Not sure exactly, but we're still a fair way out. France goes again with Bardet, Seneschal, and Pacher. Sivakov's ahead. He's been in the break all day. The gap has been taken down from 7 minutes to 3 minutes now to 2 minutes. And they form a large group with Evenepoel, De Wolf, and Quinten Hermans. So Belgium have Evenepoel, the long attack option, a top five favorite for the race, Quinten Hermans, who can sprint, and a domestique De Wolf, and Seri ahead. And France are happy with that group composition with Pacher, who, okay, I liked him in the Vuelta break stages. He still didn't get the job done in those. And Bardet, this doesn't finish uphill. This doesn't finish on the Mer de Huy. You finish in the flat. Like, I did not understand what France are doing. Make the race hard, that's fine. You make Evenepoel go with you, and Alaphilippe and Cosenfroy and Laporte sit behind, that's fine. But then you see the group composition, and Seneschal gets on the front, and he just pulls this gap open to like 2 minutes, and France are happy behind. And maybe, I don't know, maybe Lefebvre, there's a little kickback for your boy, a quick step up, but I don't think so. I'm not sure. I think it was for France, and kind of mind-blowing to me that basically Pogacar, Cosnefra, Alaphilippe, Laporte all let Evenepoel get 2 free minutes, 2.5 free minutes, whilst nothing happens behind and poor old Spain or Britain start chasing and Wout sits in. So I think mainly, Benji, it's France that stuffed it, because I think if the Netherlands were here, it's slightly different. I think Van Baal either shuts that move down or MVDP goes with Remco. I think MVDP doesn't underestimate Remco. And I think the French strategy also here really stuffed Christophe Laporte's chances as well, who I think Alaphilippe would have known by this point he might not have it.
I agree with that aspect. I think there's multiple aspects to every single country here. I agree that France is the major mistake in this thing, because not only do they make the group, they also continue that, like you mentioned, with Seneschal, who keeps on riding after the group is formed, expanding that gap. Switzerland is another team that paces to expand that gap. Below was in the initial breakaway, drop back to that group and pace for Mauro Schmidt, my pick, who rode an amazing race today. I'm going to be honest about it. Mauro Schmidt, absolute goated ride today. And Switzerland rides, which is, in my opinion, clever, because they can actually get something out of this race. There's no point for them not to race, because their best rider, arguably, is in that group right now. So I find that a usual, normal thing. Pogacar's response was sending Tratnik with the group of Evenepoel, which is kind of what we expected. But you mentioned as well in the preview exactly what played out eventually here, that sending Tratnik with Evenepoel won't fix your problem. Evenepoel is still ahead, and you won't have Tratnik to pace behind Evenepoel after this moment happens. So exactly what you predicted in the preview is what Slovenia did, and it basically ruined their race for them in terms of being able to get Pogacar to anywhere from this point onwards, because in Remco Evenepoel's group kept expanding the gap because the peloton was not riding that crazy anymore. Germany's still pacing, because that's the constant throughout the day. Netherlands pacing despite Eenkorn being in that group, because I guess they didn't 100% trust Eenkorn as well. Spain also being a team that somewhat was pacing, and I think they were doing quite a bit actually, because Soler was their leader for the day. They were doing so in the peloton behind. Now that's a situation that we have at the moment on the road. So we have those initial breakaway riders about to be caught by the Evenepoel group, and then we've got roughly 2 minutes towards the peloton group that is behind. And then we come to a situation, I think, is the fourth last, Mount Pleasant, where De Wolf, I don't think, was in that group anymore at the fourth last Mount Pleasant. I think Quinten Hermans was doing a lead out on that climb for Remco Evenepoel. And then Remco Evenepoel attacks like just before the top. And I don't think that's the right moment to attack on the climb if you do want to attack as your Remco Evenepoel. Yes, on paper, you have the strong engine to attack on a wide road and so forth. But in a descent, you won't get that much on other riders. So I think he would have been better off attacking on the climb if he wanted actual separation. But he waited until the actual top to make that move. Not only that, because he makes that move, other riders like a Seneschal who was pacing all the time stops pacing with him. So that's not ideal at all. And not only does he do that once on the Mount Pleasant there, he does that again on the Valley afterwards, completely ruining cooperation until the likes of City comes back a while later and the gap already came down a bit from the peloton to like 1 minute 40 at that point. So how did you see the situation? Was it clever from Evenepoel to attack at this point?
I was surprised because there was no pressure from the peloton. So I thought, oh, just wait, keep your teammates around you and keep thinning it out each climb. And Sivakov will drop eventually because he's been in the break and then go second last and hit him. But he wanted to get away earlier, kept trying. I thought at this point there should have been panic in the chase group behind from basically any team that isn't Belgium. And even still, people were kind of living in like a some sort of delusional scenario where like Remco would just come back from 2:30 ahead. Like I didn't, because again, yeah, once he drops everyone in the group, then you're fucked. And that's pretty much exactly what happened. Lushenko attacked. There was some finessing, but because they had such a big gap, Belgium didn't have to just go on the front and pace. Remco didn't have to. It was such a big gap, they could just time their moments. Lushenko goes, Evenepoel brings him back himself, and Hermes is sitting at the back of the group, and I was like, Quinton, you need to get on the front, buddy. But then Evenepoel goes again, Lushenko gets in his wheel, and it was kind of on these flatter sections where he puts, when he's going 55, giving no draft, it puts the doubt in Lorenzo Rota's mind, in Battistella's mind, in Schmidt's mind. Oof,
Bardet.
Do I really want to chase on the flat? And they didn't. He got, and once you see the actual separation, group dynamics take over behind eventually as he holds the gap at like 5 to 7 seconds, and that just goes out to 30. And this race is done because he drops Lushenko on a rise not too long later. And with however long to go, over a lap to go, like I don't know what it was, 25, 30 Ks, maybe longer, Remco just goes solo and Wells is a wrap, so not that actually exciting a finish, to be honest. We've seen it in San Sebastian. We've seen it in Liège-Bastogne-Liège. You don't bring him back once he has a gap like this. It's 1:30, and the peloton was still not chasing. Schmidt, Schelmoser, and Rota formed a chase group behind, trying to catch up to Lushenko. They eventually catch up to him. They then start finessing terribly. Enkhorn does an Annemiek van Vleuten move, but that's brought back by Schmidt. They then stop. Tratnik comes back. He then attacks them, and that stops the action. And then from nowhere, from minutes back, I don't know who was pacing them. All we saw was a couple of Bettiol attacks marked by Wout, even Wout attacking at one point, and then stopping was the group behind, and Christophe Laporte destroys everyone in the sprint. Coming second with Matthews third. Wout actually coming fourth. Trent in fifth. Christophe sixth. Sagan seventh. Quite a 2015's world champs top 10. Bettiol eighth. Hayter ninth. Schelmoser unlucky in 10th. He missed out on a medal there. So yeah, Remco world champ, Benji. And like there wasn't even any tension about it.
Yeah, Belgium once again after 2005, Tom Bonin in my lifetime, Gilbert in 2012, and I think Musset was before my time. I was born in 79, I think he did it in 69. No, so 97 and 96.
You were born
in 1979. No, I'm not.
Holy.
I'm not. Slight mistake right there. But that's the third Belgian world champion I've seen in my lifetime, and in a fascinating way as well. I do think that the tactics of other teams played perfectly into Belgium's race because not only did France launch Remco Evenepoel's move, they also basically never had to pace Belgium in the peloton because in the Olympics, Greg Van Avermaet was pacing from the first second, for example. In every world championships, Belgium controls the peloton, does everything to control it. And here we didn't have to do that as a Belgian nation. And I think that helps a lot into this race, despite having two of the favorites for this race as well in the list. And I find it shocking how easy Remco Evenepoel was able to just slip in a move by Frans, and they just went with it. Like, they just went with it. I can't believe that. I can't wrap my head around it. But what a year for Remco Evenepoel in both Belgium, you know, because Remco Evenepoel wins LBL, wins the Vuelta, wins World Championships, and let's not forget about the legendary Algarve. Pretty sure he won that. Anyway, that's also a race he won. What a season from Remco Evenepoel. Is Remco Evenepoel the most successful pro cyclist male from 2022?
Yeah. He's Grand Tour, Monument, World Champs. Hard to go past. Because Jonas, he won the Tour. I don't believe you get it just for winning the Tour. You have to do something else. He won a Dauphiné stage in the Tour. Hindley won the Giro. MVDP won Flanders and nothing else, really. Roubaix was Van Baal. So it has to be Remco, because Pogacar won Tirreno, Montreal, some TDF stages. It's easily Remco. It's not even close. Like,
yep,
his season this year. And it goes to show the tactics of Belgium. Like, when you have Wout behind and Remco ahead, it's almost unstoppable. Like, this is what they should have done in Leuven last year. It's unstoppable. Yeah. And I think,
if we compare it to last year we had the same situation. Evenepoel being ahead with other riders, and Wout van Aert and Belgium started chasing Remco's attack. And this year we have the opposite, where they don't do that move and Remco wins. Now, I do think Remco this year is stronger than last year, but I do think that the situation last year would have been better if Remco stayed up ahead. And I think this year, Heike proves that. And another thing I'd like to mention when it comes to Van Aert and Evenepoel wrote the time trial and won the World Championships. Turns out that is possible. Did you know that?
Yeah, but Remco won it in the same way, doing it basically. He did the same TT in the road race, and maybe Wout was going for punch and sprint. I don't know. I do think Remco also has himself to blame completely for Leuven too. Like, no one put a gun to his head, I don't think, and said, go and initiate and pace yourself with 100 plus Ks to go. And we didn't see that today. He wasn't pulling with that. When that move went, compare and contrast, Seneschal's on the front pacing today. He's sitting in until he starts actually attacking the group when the gap is stable. So very different from him. And yeah, it was, I think he now has world champs fans for one of the shortest times ever, because Worlds is in August, straight after the Tour, before the Vuelta next year. But just to reiterate, this isn't hindsight. Like, you fly Cosnefroid out with, and you know I love Benoit, but Australia is not a Francophone country. Has Benoit ever won a race in a non-Francophone country? Let me just check quickly. No. Benoit's never won a race where people don't speak French. So, and then he's flown over really late as well.
Is this your theory?
Well,
because the country is not French.
Well, doesn't speak French. He can win in Quebec.
Is that why he lost Amstel?
Yeah. The percentage of people speaking French is just simply not high enough. And then Alaphilippe clearly wasn't on. He was dropped, actually. Maybe he gave up, but he was dropped and really had no impact on the race at all from the Wout van Aert group chasing, which had legit sprinters in it, like Sagan and Christoph, and we all know the season Sagan's had. And they did not ride for Laporte at all. And it's arguable that Christoph Laporte has been the highest level French rider in big one-day races this year, if you factor in that he's been having to ride for Wout a lot of the time. So, yeah, I was really surprised that Christoph Dedoor didn't get, they didn't change. I guess it was too late to change him, but yeah, he won that sprint easily. And I think he could have been world champion. Nah, that's not true, because if Remco wasn't ahead, then the race is more open, but still, something to think about.
Yeah, certainly. But I also need to think about that group that was ahead, for example, ahead of the peloton and got caught in the last kilometer. They really didn't get what they deserved from this race, but it also was because of their playing tactics in that group that they eventually got caught. So there's kind of like the balance between they deserved more, but their final kilometer didn't deserve more. But the likes of Mauro Schmidt, Kjell Mose, those riders in that group, Rota rode a very good race, and they basically get nothing in return. Kjell Mose at least gets a top 10. Schmidt gets a 17th spot, which does not represent this race at all. And we see the likes of a Kristoff, an Alexander Kristoff, a Peter Sagan in that top 10.
Invisible riders that all day.
We didn't see them at all. No. Like, amazing. I love that. And can we make another clip that says, is Peter Sagan back or is it not right yet?
I'm not doing the Peter Sagan's back. You got beaten by Trentin in the sprint. he beat Petty Olin Hayter. So, and Skelmers got caught. So, nah, we're not there yet. Maybe he's got to do, if he wins, like, I don't know, Paris-Tours, will he be back in time for Paris-Tours? If he comes second in that, I might be able to, we could do a clip on that, I guess. But Matthews, again, invisible, but tactics perfect. I think he came third. I think that's a really good result. He should be happy with 400. I mean, first of all, it's a medal for Australia. And I think going into this race, any medal for Australia in this race with the start list is a huge ask, and he achieved that. So that's really, really good. And also 400 UCI points for Bike Exchange. So they are pretty much saved from relegation. That's like another 40% of their gap on Lotto increase. So that's big. Bettiol takes 150 and Powerless 30. So EF got a few points to maybe a little bit more, a little less than they would hope. Garcia Cortina 85. So in terms of relegation, Cofidis and Arkea are the teams that really missed out on world champs and are the only ones that I think, to be honest, I think it's Lotto and Israel that are going down. But yeah, that's also the game within the game. But yeah, any last thoughts on world champs, Benji? Well, we've got a few minutes on the overall world championships in Wollongong before Glasgow next year.
I think that I enjoyed the parkour more than Leuven last year. Please don't throw me out, Belgium. Please don't throw me out.
What do you mean?
I enjoyed the parkour more than Leuven last year. It felt more, I don't know, I like the wider roads a lot more than the narrow roads. Does that make sense?
No. Because last year the men's race was 1,000 times better. Or maybe it would have been boring if Belgium got the tactics right. I don't know. Last year's race was pretty good. I guess it was safer, and I think a pretty safe course. I can't remember.
Zimmermann doesn't agree.
There were crashes, of course, but he crashed in a straight line overlapped his wheel. And Annemiek van Vleuten crashed for, no one really knows. Oh, she dropped a chain. But yeah, in terms of the worlds, I think it was. Listen, I don't think too many of the riders will be thinking, wow, what a great world champs. I'm so glad we went down to Australia to get honked out by cars or arrested by police, even if it was their fault. A lot of them just sat in the peloton and Remco rode away from them. I guess for riders like Annemiek van Vleuten, it was fine.
I think so as well. Now, there's one aspect to it. Mollema didn't get attacked by a bird today, so I arguably went for Netherlands in that aspect. But I would also say that the fact that a Van der Poel misses out on a world championship, so Van Aert misses out on becoming world champion and so forth, knowing that the Glasgow parkour, we've mentioned it a tiny bit when it comes to our women's recap at the end of it, is a bit similar. Less altitude meters, 277 kilometers or something. We'll go into it deeper later. But it's very similar in the punchy style thing like the Trentin European Champs. It's that same like loop that they have, or very similar loop that they have. And we saw Van der Poel and Van Aert going there. But it's now between the Tour and the Vuelta next year. How do you see that when it comes to the schedule of Van Aert and so forth? Might he skip the Tour de France for that? But can he do the Giro knowing that he does the classic so closely before that? That's also difficult. It's going to be difficult to schedule with that World Championships after the Tour?
Make Laporte and Van Baal classics leaders with Tratnik, and yeah, get Wout to target GC. If he wants to target GC at some point in his career, next year is the year to do it with, we don't know the parkour yet, but with into the Giro, you could do other stage races, take loads of stages, try and win a GC. I know that's probably not going to be the plan. But the classic, you don't think you should do
Roubaix,
that?
Mate, I can't get over it. He needs to win Roubaix at some point. I can't get over it.
He needs to, but when does the Giro and Roubaix overlap? Didn't MVDP
do
Roubaix both?
Roubaix is more important than the Giro.
I don't know about that. I think one day races are a little bit overrated. They only last for one day versus 21.
Your logic today is flawless.
Well, yeah, 21 times more important. Yeah, I think doing the Tour plus Worlds is going to be very difficult. We see at San Sebastian, the riders that do the Tour often struggle. It's maybe the same time afterwards. I wonder what happens to San Sebastian. Ganna, I think, cannot do the Tour and should focus on Worlds TT and the Classics, maybe, and the Giro. I don't know. What sort of course is it? Christoph Laporte looks good for him too. Actually, looks a really good
Mads Pedersen, mate.
Pedersen, yeah. That's a good question. Where does Mads Pedersen come today? Second, I think.
Top 10.
Oh, that top 10. I mean, Sagan came 8th.
Uri Sagan came 8th?
Well, I mean, maybe. Yeah, I think Pedersen, yeah, probably would have come 2nd, I would say. So silver medal, save the legs. I don't know. Anyway, that was the World Champs. Let us know what you thought. How did you cope with the time zones? If you're watching and not in Australia, if you were in Australia and you did attend the race, let us know what you felt the atmosphere was like. Did you enjoy attending it? These circuits, you know, you get to see the riders 10, 12 times. But otherwise, we have a transfer recap dropping on Monday or Tuesday, reacting to the Adam Yates news. Otherwise, we will have maybe some Italian semi-classics content too, because Emilia has a pretty good stylist usually and is quite a good race. So stay tuned for that. But for now, that's all from the World Champs. Ciao.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.